Rich Rosenzweig is here.
Yep.
From Hillsdale, and he's going to be talking about a talk. He's not going to give it all away, but he's going to be talking at the Rogan Historical Society on Sunday about a screenplay he's writing. And it revolves around the hamlet of Boston Corners. I've heard of Boston Corners, but I can't quite figure out where it is.
Well, unless you live in the area, not many people do, but there really isn't even a town center. It's a little tiny village at the foot of the Taconic Mountains in the New York side. And it's just east of Ankrum.
Oh, I thought it was in Massachusetts.
Well, that's actually the big topic of the discussion. One of the many really interesting aspects about this town is that up until 1855, it was part of Massachusetts, uh-huh. except it was separated from the rest of the state by the mountains. So the history that's really part of the entire story, which ended in the first heavyweight boxing championship match, which was in the village in 1853, is all about a mistake of geography. It was this little tiny patch of land. I think 500 acres is what was lived on by 60 people.
I was going to say, what was the population like?
It was apparently about 60 people in the 1850s, all farmers, or almost all farmers, and the state line was a straight line in the west. Most people know the western part of Massachusetts and the Berkshire Mountains, and up until that time, it was just a straight line, but the mountains veered off at the very southern tip, so this little triangular patch of land, which was Boston Corner, singular at the time, and they named it, they think, because it was the furthest point from Boston you could get in Massachusetts. And you couldn't get there from the rest of the state unless you went way out of the way. So as a result, in the beginning, it was convenient that people didn't have to pay taxes. They weren't bothered by anyone else. Uh-huh. But it also didn't have any law. So when gangsters and thugs and rapists and murderers found out about the place, it was a place to hide because they were out of the jurisdiction of the rest of the state.
Well, Hudson had his reputation, too, but I don't think there were murderers involved.
Really?
I don't think so.
I bet
you think?
There were. Why not?
Well, there was gambling and prostitution and all kinds of stuff like that.
Well, there were even stories of, now this is the 1840s and 50s, carriages would pull up and guys would get out. They'd cross the line into the town. They'd pull out their pistols, have a pistol duel. One person would get shot, maybe killed, and then they'd leave. And the locals were just kind of freaked out by that.
At least one of them would leave. The other one
well,
would
yeah,
be,
exactly. They'd load the other guy in the back
so
of the
wagon.
So
how did
wagon.
They come to have this famous prize fight there?
Well, another thing that had happened right at the time was they just completed the Harlem River line that went from New York City all the way to Chatham. And at the time, boxing was illegal but hugely popular. And usually the guys who were considered themselves the toughest were thugs or gangsters, but still well known in at least city circles. And what happened was, I don't know if any, well, for all of you, those of you who saw The Gangs of New York, that was a pretty accurate description of what life was like in lower Manhattan, and gangs ruled the day down there. And
I didn't know that prize fighting was outlawed.
It was illegal probably, I think, until, I want to say, at least the more popular and more the better known era when John L. Sullivan was the champ in the 1880s, but this was before that, and even though it was illegal, the fight was heavily reported by all the newspapers. They would always preface the article by saying that boxing is a disgusting sport and should be outlawed, but here's what happened round by round, and the well-documented fight, and there's a plaque in the town on the site where the fight happened, was between a 41-year-old chap named Yankee Sullivan, who was 5'8.5", 5'9", and 150 pounds, versus the challenger, who was a 23-year-old, 6'1", 175-pound, a big guy for those days, named John Morrissey. And
who won?
Well, even more interesting, the odds were heavily favored for the young guy to beat the crap out of the old guy, basically. And they got there. The odds were, I guess it was 10 to 8 in his favor. And it was apparent from the very get-go that the old guy, Yankee Sullivan, had a lot more skill. And in those days, they were boxing was under New London rules, and a round would end when a fighter's knees would touch the ground. So what Yankee Sullivan came out and did was bash his opponent in the face. It was bare knuckles, very bloody, and then immediately dropped to one knee and end the round. And he did this, and I don't want to give too much away, but the fight lasted 37 rounds, almost an hour, and because of something that happened at the end, the winner was sort of unexpected, and a big riot broke
out. Okay, you have to wait for the film to know what the end is. But how...
For the talk. Will you reveal the ending in the talk?
I think I will, only because that's well documented, but I won't reveal the ending of the screenplay, which is based on a book that was written in the late 1930s.
Oh, by whom?
Two authors, a guy named Clay Perry and John Pell, who were... one was a journalist, one was a filmmaker, and they took all of the factual events that happened there and also stories about horse thievery and wrote this really incredible novel that was probably destined to be a big hit at the time. But as I was discussing with you before, Ellen, the word was is that it would have put Boston Corner on the map as a grubby little den for thieves. And suddenly there was the only books that were around faded quickly. There was only one printing. And it kind of faded into this obscure local legend.
Hmm. What's the novel called?
It's called Hell's Acres, which was the nickname of the town.
Of Boston.
Did they burn the books? So
well, that was one idea. But now suffice to say, it's really hard to find a copy of the book. And they go for a lot of money if you find it online.
Hmm.
Uh-huh. Well, so is this the basis of your screenplay is about the
fight?
It
is. It's actually an adaptation of the novel, which the basic plot is about a horse breeder in Saratoga who, in order to get justice for a friend who was killed, tries to capture horse thieves who killed his friend. Who were running racehorses, stolen racehorses, through a pass in the mountains in Boston Corners, dyeing them a different color, and they wind up getting sold to slower tracks on Long Island and runners.
How do you dye a horse? That's what
In those days, it was probably a crude and rough practice, but it is documented also, even though this particular gang is probably fictional or based on stories about horse thieves then. But there were gangs who stole horses and probably a mixture of some noxious...
There were all kinds of tricks. Yeah. I mean, if you... I'm a big fan of A.J. Liebling, and he talks about how in horse racing there was always gimmicks you could do to sell your horse to, you know, perpetuate its life.
Mm. Right.
Short-term things that you could do to mask how old they were and things like that.
Well, there actually was a famous gang that ran horses across the Canadian border, and they would dye them a different color. And it was a pretty nasty
business. It's not like they dyed them red, Alan.
No, I understand. I suppose you could paint them in some
way.
Well,
they do it now. They will spray horses for fun, sure. and you know, kids will put little patterns on them. But in those days, horse stealing was a nasty, big, big problem, because obviously in those days, if someone stole your horse...
It's like stealing your automobile.
Exactly. Yeah. And maybe your livelihood as well. So
is this your first screenplay?
It's not. It's the third of four, but by far it's the most ambitious in terms of a budget that you'd need to make a film like this. So it's a tough sell, but I'm getting some good traction lately, and I always love giving the historical talks because it's the real history that I think is most fascinating about it.
Well, how does a drummer turn into a screenwriter?
Well, for several reasons. My brother, Steve, who lives in the area, was a filmmaker. He was a production designer, and I think in the family we just have a big love of film. And during the big indie period in the 90s, it was probably a lull in my playing career that I decided maybe I could write a story. So as most writers do, the first thing I wrote was about a drummer. So you write what you know, and I got enough good feedback on that, and I just kept going. And this story, though, hit me because I was visiting the area before I moved here and found out about Boston Corners and the fight.
Have any of your other screenplays been produced?
They have not, but I'm hanging in there with mm-hmm. winning some competitions. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I want to feature when I give my speak on Sunday is a 10-minute teaser trailer that I produced this past year. That's kind of a fun way of drumming up business and excitement about the story, so I'll be showing that as well.
Alan, you want to give the details about Sunday's speech?
I do. It's at 2 o'clock, right?
Correct.
At the Rolf Jansen Historical Society Museum, which is also kind of hard to find, I think. Is it near the ironworks, the old ironworks?
It is, but it's you're going in that direction, but it's a little easier than that because it's almost right off of Route 22.
Route 22.
It's a quaint old church in Copaic Falls.
And it's at, it says here, NY, New York, 344 and 8 Miles Road in Copaic Falls.
That sounds more complicated than it is.
So it's just, it's off Route 22.
Correct. It's off 22, a little north of Copaic and a little south of Hillsdale.
Oh, this is what else I was told. It's opposite the Taconic Wayside Inn.
Right.
And next to the post office. There you go.
Look for the American flag, I guess.
That's right. That's right. And it's this Sunday at 2 o'clock. So take a ride out to the wilderness and
Oh, it'd be great to see people there. I know a lot of local people love the story, and we'll all be talking about and maybe fighting over what is true and what is just legend, but it should be fun.
People love local history around here, so I think you'll get a good crowd. I hope so.
What's the line from The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance? You know, about the myth and the truth and the legend? Go, you know what I'm talking about? No?
Well, is it okay. With Jack Palance and...
The idea is you go with the myth. That's always better.
Yeah.
Unless the truth is even...
Well, sometimes,
I think the truth here is actually... is tons of fun. You could just do a whole story on the fights, but hopefully there'll be some folks down there.
Well, we don't mean to give you the bum's rush today, Rich, but we're in the middle of a pledge drive.
So I've heard.
So we're kind of limited in how long we keep any of our guests in today because we got to get back to pitching.
It's quite all right.
But thanks for coming in, and we'll remind our guests again, I mean our listeners again, 2 p.m. on Sunday at the Rolf Jansen Historical Society.
Yes. A talk with lots of pictures and some film and...
Cool. Any snacks?
I'm not sure. I wasn't told.
That's because, you know, Ellen always wants to know about that.
Oh, sure. I'll give a phone number, too.
That's a good idea.
646-373-5002. Somebody's cell phone. Anyway.
It's not mine.
Someone who knows how to get there.
Well, thanks so much for coming in, Rich.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome.
We've been talking to Rich Rosenzweig.
Who
you can see Sunday at 2 o'clock.
Yes, and knows all the lore of Boston Commons, as a little hamlet that no longer exists as Boston Corners. I mean, not Commons, Corners.
Yeah, so. I kept calling it Boston Commons. Thanks, Rich.
Thank you.